Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm, and we are back for more Hunt the Truth discussion. Yes, everyone, Season 2 is finally here. We have lots to discuss tonight. We have our primer episode that just came out, and joining me on this epic journey is Godzilla T, and we're also welcoming back Toa Freak, a.k.a. Halo Cannon. Welcome, guys, to another season of Hunt the Truth goodness.
It's been so long.
We've waited for this day to come.
Oh, yes.
So many chills
the
right now.
The day I would return would always be glorious.
Yes.
And Hunt the Truth is good, too.
Well, yeah. they go in tandem very well, don't they?
Yes, right? It's almost like we planned that.
I know. So strange how that works out, but yet so awesome at the same time. So we are here to discuss the epic tale of Pharaoh. That is actually who we're getting this time. We're not actually getting Petra, as we were led to believe at the end of Season 1. So we get the Pharaoh side. So this is a completely new side to the story that we have never seen before. We're picking up right where Ben left off in Season 1. There's a bunch of different things that have happened since then, and Pharaoh is obviously going to kind of detail a lot about that. But there's quite a few... interesting things that we learned about Pharaoh in this primer episode, this pilot episode. Just like they did for Season 1, this is Episode 0. So we actually technically haven't started yet on the numbers, but this is basically the introduction to what we're going to be seeing for Season 2 of Hunt the Truth. Now, there are a few other details that we need to get to first before we really dive into this. And that is Time actually announced, or kind of was the original source that announced Season 2 and when it was going to launch. And that was on Monday, yesterday. And we got a little bit of information behind kind of the more technical aspects of what we're going to see in Season 2 of Hunt the Truth. So we have a whole list of new cast members that are going to be joining Season 2. We have the voice actor that's actually behind Pharaoh now, and a couple other people that I think people will, or a few other names that people will recognize. So Gianna Gavin Carr is the voice behind Pharaoh, and there's a lot of other names in there, including I think a lot of people will recognize Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker from Star Wars.
Of course, the question is, will you recognize him when he's on?
That's a very
exactly.
good question.
I don't think nobody ever recognizes any of the voices he does until somebody points it out.
I'd never picked him for the Joker, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That'll be one of those things we're definitely going to have to keep an ear out for.
Yeah.
I'm going to be relying on a lot of other people for that.
So am I. I do not have an ear for Mark Hamill, I'm sad to say.
Yeah. I mean, outside of Star Wars, and I know his voice has probably changed a lot since then. I mean, we're going to see him in the new Star Wars movie, but I don't think we're going to really get a good... I mean, I'm sure somebody will pick him out and be like, oh,
yeah,
he's that guy. But until that happens, I have no idea who he's going to be at all in this thing. But joining him is also Alan Tudyk. A lot of people may remember him from Firefly or from Halo as Wash.
No, not Wash. Mickey.
Wash is Firefly.
Yeah.
Mickey.
Yeah.
I got the two mixed up. Sorry. Mickey.
Wait a minute.
Perfect. Sorry.
That is perfectly acceptable.
I was thinking Firefly. I was still in the Firefly reference, so I didn't transition yet. But yes, Mickey from Halo 3 ODST.
If we're to be honest, Halo 3 ODST is basically Halo Serenity.
In a sense, it is. Because honestly, if you haven't seen Firefly or Serenity, you guys really should, because they are great TV shows and movie.
Highly recommended.
So we have him showing up in Hunt the Truth. I don't know if he'll be showing up as Mickey or if he's going to be playing another character. My guess would be he'll be playing another character.
Most likely.
Well, yeah, we'll have to see kind of how that fits in with Hunt the Truth as it comes through Season 2. None of the other names particularly stuck out to me.
There is one I'd love to bring up. Bruce Williams, who was actually the motion capture actor for Master Chief in Halo 4. So no voice work prior, but I just thought that was interesting. He's done voice work, but he was sort of in Halo 4. So,
okay,
that's interesting.
All right, very nice. So yeah, there's a lot of other actors and actresses in here that we'll be able to experience throughout the season 2 of Hunt the Truth. Gosh, I'm so excited for this. Among the list of actors, we got a little information from Frankie and Noah about the series. There's a few technical details that are different. For example, this time the series is actually fully written before it's produced. So for those of you who were tagging along during season 1 of Hunt the Truth, you'll actually remember that they were producing the episodes as they were going along. So the whole thing where you're actually calling in and leaving voice messages, yeah, they were working on that episode by the time people actually sent it in. So they were 2 episodes ahead of release every single week, or like 2 to 3 episodes. So that is a very different production for this, where this is completely set up. They know exactly what they're going to be talking about, where the other one was kind of half knowing what they were going to say, but another half reactionary to what we were reacting to, which was awesome.
The way they pulled it off, writing it as they were, or, you know, playing the episodes while they're still writing the future episodes, they pulled it off so well. And it opened it up to have that, you know, call-in show, you know, where people were leaving the messages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that they're not going to have anything like that, since they've already produced all the shows or wrote all the shows. But I guess it's possible they could still work it in there.
I could see them having like a place marker where, okay, based on whatever happens, we do this. My guess, though, is this season is going to end at the launch of Halo 5. So when Halo 5 launches midnight on Tuesday, that's when the last episode of Hunt the Truth is going to come out. That would be my guess.
Yeah, either that or they'll do that the month. I'm kind of hoping they would do the Monday, that Monday night or something. But it could definitely go the way you're proposing, which be interesting. Come home, start the installation, listen to Hunt the Truth, and then dive into Halo 5.
Right. So the reason I say that is because another little tidbit that they said out here was the episodes, they're not going to be as many episodes for this season, but the episodes are going to be routinely longer.
Oh,
so
good.
They're going to, my guess is they're going to try to fit kind of a similar time frame into just fewer episodes, just because of how close this really is to the launch of Halo 5. And stuff that's going to be presented in this season is going to play a part in what we see in Halo 5, which I really like, because the whole thing of the mysterious stuff that was happening in the outer colonies that Mashaq was alluding to, that's still a big mystery we have really very mm-hmm. few details on.
And I'm still pretty sure that that's related to whatever was happening, you know, the Guardians and whatnot directly.
Oh, I have no doubt it is.
Yeah,
I think that's a very realistic possibility. There's still a number of things that we don't know. And I think it's just going to, over these next, was it 5 weeks? Yeah, 5 weeks. We're going to see how this really transforms and lays out some more foundational work. Because I think the first season, it was more geared towards, okay, there is definitely a reason behind trying to figure out where Chief is, but there's also this dark side of Oni that is finally kind of rearing its head within the inner colonies, where you've always had this dichotomy of the innies in the outer colonies willing to uprise and rebel, and then everyone in the inner colonies being protected by the UEG and just kind of going along as they see fit. Well, as we kind of learn throughout season 1 and a little more into the primer for season 2, it's stirring up a lot of trouble in the inner colony. So people are talking, there's lots of stuff going on within the UEG and the centralized government of the UNSC. And that dichotomy is getting unbalanced. So it's really starting to actually take an effect. And it's going to be really cool to see how that evolves over time and how that really plays into some of the mystery behind the Guardians and the foreigner stuff that we've been hinted at, but we really don't know too much about yet. So that's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much they'll actually get into that part of it, but I'm sure they're really going to whet our appetite about it.
Well, we'll have to tune in next week to see.
Uh-huh.
Cliffhangers every week. I can see it coming. Yeah.
Well, the one thing I got to say in this regard, it does sound like Petra's been out there stirring stuff up.
It definitely does.
Just and for- because of some of the references they've made.
Yeah. Though I imagine she's not going to get her interview, her promised interview with Master Chief at this point.
Probably not, but you never know. This is only one small portion of the Halo universe.
Oh, yes.
But another article that they, at that time, shortly released after they made the announcement of when Season 2 was going to premiere, was 12 things that they learned about Season 2 that they got from talking with Frank, Noah, and Janina? Is that how you say her name? Janina? Probably Janina. Sorry if I'm if you're listening for some reason and I completely butchered your name. So just kind of listing off the few things. And if you want to actually read the full article, you can head over to our website. We have links to all the time stuff. You can go check those out. But first thing is we find out more about Ben straight away. So when I guess we'll get into the first or second episode and figure out what actually happened to Ben after he was taken from his interview on the last episode of season one. Second thing is season two is partly a mediation meditation on perspective. Number three, it scales up quicker. I think that's just because of how few episodes there are. Number four, it deals with why no one's asked the questions Ben's asked until now. I think that kind of plays along with the whole disruptions on the inner colonies and how a lot of the stuff that he has publicized and made known is the outer colonies have known about for a long time, but getting it inside has been kind of that firewall that he finally was able to break. So I think that's going to be really cool to see. Number five, unlike season one, season two was completely written before recording. So we touched on that a little bit already. Number six, part of Pharaoh's persona evolved out of technical necessity. So the person that we knew from season one is probably going to be a lot more fleshed out. We're going to see a lot more of her character in season two. Number seven, Mark Hamill got involved simply because he liked the story, which is kind of cool that the Hunt the Truth
That's
stuff.
That's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there, I mean,
to think of everything that is offered to him.
Yeah.
You know, the different voice acting gigs and all this. And he goes and looks up somebody because he wants to be part of this story.
I think that just kind of speaks to how awesome Hunt the Truth is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. To have this level of story writing to where you're drawing people of that caliber to you is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. I'm sure they still signed a nice big fat paycheck to him, but to have somebody come in and do that, or to be that invested in it, is cool.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I just find it really cool that, and you look at some of the other actors that we have seen. I mean, look at all the actors in ODST. They all really liked Halo. They've all been big Bungie fans for a while. So of course they just kind of naturally fit in. But I mean, Mark Hamill, I guess, wouldn't necessarily be a shot out of left field, but it's definitely one of those things where you see a big time celebrity find something that they're interested in. It's like, hey, I want to be a part of this. It's like, wait, you recognize this, that you're into this? That's awesome. kind of thing. So seeing him in Hunt the Truth, I think that tickles my funny bone a little bit. Cause I did watch Star Wars growing up. Like I would watch the second trilogy over and over again during the summer. So that was cool.
You have no idea how many videotapes I have. Well, not necessarily me, but my wife has worn out.
Well, now they're all digital, so you don't have to wear them out anymore.
Yes. And as soon as I was capable of putting them on my server digitally, I did it. Because I think she figured out a way to wear out a DVD.
I'm not surprised.
Is that even possible?
No. Yeah, actually, it is.
Yep.
Do you just like read it so much that it just burns off the bits?
It starts to disrupt the data, yes.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Just wait, Todd. She's going to figure out a way to wear out the digital version too.
So, hard drives have a lifespan. I mean, I guess technically every medium has a lifespan if you think about it.
Yeah. Yep.
Betamax. N64 Josh in the chat says Betamax.
Poor Betamax.
Sorry, that was funny.
It was
funny.
Never released on Betamax. I still have three tapes.
Someone's showing their Betamax age tapes with Betamax.
Hey, man, that's steady the art.
Maybe back in the day, sure. Oh, gosh. All right. Number eight, Mark Hamill initially pitched his character with an Eastern European accent. So, not exactly sure.
So I wonder what it wound up actually being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of goes into the whole idea of like what this, you know, what the future, what 2558 is like, mm-hmm. with, yeah, there's really not much of a Europe, not much of a North America. They're technically there, but at the same time, you know, the modern boundaries, be them geological or cultural, are kind of dissolved. So there technically is no East European accent. It's like, I think what they were getting at.
Nice.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time they've introduced accents into the,
oh yeah, absolutely,
into the, you know, into the games and stuff.
Yeah.
And so accents are still around, but I just, okay.
I think they were talking about like on a more grandiose, on a grander level. It's like those cultural divides are, they're especially at least on Earth are kind of gone and less, they're different now.
Right. And one of the things that the Time article pointed out was that Mark may have not quite understood that the whole thing with continents doesn't quite exist 500 years in the future. But even regardless, though, I think that's cool that if he's interested in participating in something like Hunt the Truth, and he already knows kind of a role and like an accent that he wants to portray with this character. I mean, it's like, the guy has thought a little bit about actually participating in it. That's how interested he is in wanting to be a part of it.
Yeah. I kind of hope he did get to keep, like, have some kind of accent, just because that would be kind of interesting. So it's like when you have a little bit of multiculturalism in Halo.
Yeah. And I think we've gotten that throughout a good majority of the Halo universe as it is already. I mean, you definitely...
Oh, absolutely.
You definitely can detect some of the accents that has been in Halo. So it's just, I find it really cool that Mark gets interested and he already has a sense of how he wants to sort of stage or develop his character. So we'll see how that kind of influences him. I think that's a really cool outcome of that, to see that other people are just like wanting to be a part of this because of how impressive the first season was. So I just think that's cool. So the next point is season two is a brilliant emotional space odyssey. So you take a look at kind of the way that they're trying to stage this.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of already have space odyssey kind of already enveloped in the Halo universe in certain aspects. So it kind of makes sense that it fits that role as well. I think that's pretty cool. And then the next thing is the series was cast with gender non-specific roles. So they went in thinking that all the characters they could bring in into season two could be played by either a male or a female, except obviously for the people that were already established in season one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I like that. It's like, that's how you write good characters. You write a character, you don't write a gender, and it shouldn't be a part of that character unless it's a major part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
at least one of Hunt the Truth's characters may be lurking in Halo 5.
Oh,
something like an Easter egg.
That would be interesting to see how that might play out. Cause they did once say that Michael Sullivan would be in Halo 4, but I don't think that ever panned out.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Be interested to see who that is.
And where it is.
And where, yeah, and where.
Right. So in the subtext of this particular point, Frankie points out that the events that happened in season two happened simultaneously and before the game. So there's going to be part of season two that overlaps with the actual campaign side of Halo 5 Guardians. Take that.
Mm-hmm. They are, just in this first episode, they have tied in into two other series in the Halo series.
Mm-hmm.
They tied into the Kilo 5 trilogy, and then there was another one they tied into. So, you know, they're, you know, bringing all these stories together to further the overall story. So I can see how that's going to work really well.
Yeah. There is a minor tie-in with I Love Bees with one of the colonies they mentioned, but I don't know if that's the other one you were thinking of.
No, because I haven't listened to, I haven't done I Love Bees yet.
Okay. I mean, it technically also ties into it ties more into Halsey's journal. Just it's like I Love Bees because that's like the first time it was mentioned, and then Halsey's journal, kind of the event they talk about in the episode is more specifically from Halsey's journal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that when we get to the episode.
Yeah.
And the last point that they had from the 12 things is season 2 ties into stuff we'll see in the next Halo, which we kind of talked about. I really find it cool to because season 1, there wasn't quite a direct tie, or it didn't seem like there was a direct tie with what was going on in Halo 5 Guardians. It seemed like a lot more the setup behind the purpose of originally why Locke was going to be hunting Chief, but then it kind of blew up into the whole insurrectionist thing and bringing that back to light. So I find it really, really nice that we'll see the Hunter Truth stuff fill into season 5 and even fill into Halo games after Halo 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that has me excited because the whole story stuff, I mean, the Halo 4 story, a little lackluster. And the books were difficult to read. I think everyone admits that. So it's really cool to see how well season 1 did in terms of really portraying a new story. And then having season 2 really come and continue that and explore more broadly and establish a more foundational piece for Halo 5 Guardians. That tickles my Lori funny bone. Because we've gotten a lot of stuff for multiplayer and arena in terms of the game specifically, but it's only been recently where we've gotten a lot of tidbits of information about what's going on in the campaign, what's going on in the universe at this point. And Hunt the Truth for season 1 kind of helped fill that. And we've had a few really good books that have been out this year that has done a really good job at setting up some of the characters and providing some other story that's not necessarily in close timeline with Halo 5, but are close enough to kind of see a little bit of a change happening. I think the latest book, Last Light, definitely shines a little bit on that and definitely dives into the characters of Blue Team, where they stand today, and some of the Forerunner happenings, or like how the Forerunner stuff is kind of really invading the Halo universe as we know it. And we'll actually be talking about that more on Thursday, the next podcast after this one. So,
well, the one thing I like about these books that they're releasing before Halo 5 is, so far the ones I've read, it's not required reading to understand the game. It sheds some light on the game, but it's, you know, it's not required reading like the Forerunner trilogy was to be able to understand Halo 4 relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one thing I'm really glad to see. And that's when they announced these books, that's what I was kind of afraid of, is they were going to pull the same thing again. But don't get me wrong, the books are great and they've got a lot of great information in them, but they're not necessarily required reading to play the game.
Yeah.
Depending, and it kind of all depends on how they do that opening, the opening cinematic. So,
yeah.
You know, for each.
So the books this time around are much more just, they just kind of, they'll add to the experience they'll add to the experience overall if you've read them, but they won't take away if you haven't, it so far it would seem.
And as far as the books are concerned, we had the infographic that came out at San Diego Comic-Con, and I think all of us here would agree, it's probably in your best interest to read and catch up on all the stuff that is in that infographic to get the fullest or to get the most out of the campaign experience. Now, we know that there are those people that you really just play the campaign that's in the game and that's the only story you get. Great. I think there's a lot of stuff they learned from their process with Halo 4, and they're going to use that to make that opening cinematic that's supposed to kind of help fill in the gaps be a lot more fleshed out and a lot more informative to people that only play the games. Hopefully to the point where mm-hmm. it helps fill in some of the holes from Halo 4 that didn't get answered.
Yeah.
I hope.
Hopefully.
I hope.
I don't know. That would be a lot to ask to add to another game.
See, I'm not necessarily sure if it really would. Because, I mean, I think I reference this way too often in like some of my own stuff, but it really is a great example. Gears of War, you know, in all their games, they explain the backstory and what's happened in between the games. And much like between Halo 3 and Halo 4, Halo 4 and Halo 5, between Gears 2 and Gears 3, there was a lot that happened, but they adequately explained it within 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully 343 can do something like that.
I think they're definitely capable of, and I think they've kind of realized
yeah.
that they need to do that. So I think we'll definitely see some stuff. All right. Well, that's enough about kind of the lead up to the whole Hunt the Truth season 2 stuff. So now we'll actually jump into season 2. We'll start with the primer. We'll start with the little audio tease that we got on Monday. And it's also kind of the pre-season 2. And this is where we learn that Pharaoh is going to be the one behind the microphone. This is something that she's not good at. This is the whole Hunt the Truth thing, the whole talking behind the microphone. That's a Ben thing. That's a Petra thing. They're the ones, they're the journalists. They're used to talking to people. They're used to articulating and pulling the facts together and presenting it in a way for people to understand. That's not at all how Pharaoh thinks, how she operates. So it's definitely going to be a completely new perspective and a completely new style, probably, of storytelling that we're going to get in this podcast form. That's really cool. I mean,
yeah,
I'll say this to start off. Hunt the Truth was definitely an instant hit for me because the fact that I do a podcast and the whole audio drama thing just kind of scratched that itch of like, oh, this is actual lore stuff that has me interested. So that was definitely kind of the big piece. And I remember when we first started this saying that there wasn't stuff that really kept me in, but as the story developed and as they made more episodes, it's like, wow, this is actually really good. I like this method of storytelling. So that's really cool. And to see Pharaoh come in being uncomfortable behind a microphone, being someone that isn't used to addressing an audience of millions over the airwaves. I mean, it's going to be something that's completely different. And I think that's going to provide a lot more avenues of storytelling and a lot more grit behind the stories that Pharaoh's going to tell instead of Ben, where he was discovering or trying to unravel the truth, where Pharaoh knows what's happened. So it's going to be a lot more in your face, a lot more gritty, dark stories that are going to be told. And that really excites me.
Yeah. Like I said before, the whole radio drama thing hooked me because I got hooked on the old radio shows, which they were radio dramas. So it like you said, it scratched that itch. And to have it tie into something I love so much, which is the Halo universe, is awesome.
Another thing that Pharaoh says in their little pre-season 2 thing is that everything that happened in season 1, it isn't what she wanted at all. She had aspirations and hopes for a better future, and then everything that she did just got twisted and complicated. And by the time she got to where we are now, she doesn't even recognize like who she is anymore. Like the person that she was before being Pharaoh, before really kind of making this or kind of like leading the insurrectionists, she's someone completely different now. And she goes on to say that's not why everyone's listening, which I think everyone is like, yeah, that's probably why. And if you're taking this from within the universe, you definitely want to know what happened to Ben. You want to know why a lot of stuff didn't go the way that they planned it. And she said that this is the story of how we got here. This is my story. This is the story of how Benjamin Giroux was a journalist on the hunt for truth and how he got turned into an Oni scapegoat and what she's going to do about it. So that was the primer for season 2. and the dark, chilling music throughout the end and all the sound effects, I think, really sets up the feeling and the setting that this new direction is going to be taken in. It definitely has that dark and gritty. I'm gonna use those terms over and over again because I think that's just what sticks out for season two.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
All right. So let's dive into the pilot episode, episode zero of season two. So we start out by hearing Pharaoh talking to a crowd of people. And this is actually kind of cool because within this primer episode, we almost get a recap of what happened in season one with Benjamin Giroux. And
yeah,
we should probably, I guess, we should do a quick overview of season one, but for the sake of time, because we could ramble on season one so long.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, go listen to the supercut of season one. And if you want to, go back and listen to our episodes where we discuss every episode of season one. Because in order to do a proper overview, we would have had to really kind of set up beforehand. and we would totally ramble on if we actually went down that route.
Yeah, that's a 2-hour show by itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, the best thing to do might just be listen to the last episode that we did, because we did kind of cover some of the details of how we got to the last episode. So if you want to just listen to one episode, then listen to the last one. If you're interested in listening to all of the previous Hunt the Truth episodes that we've done, definitely go check them out. They're in the feed. You can find them on the website. But other than that, I think kind of the big points to hit is Benjiro was hired to do an in-depth profile on the Master Chief, started to see inconsistencies, started to see Oni lies from Outer Colony sources, had people from the Outer Colonies, powerful people, help him get the details, get the facts, and started to become more of an Oni secrecy thing instead of a Master Chief thing. And that's when Ben got in over his head, and that's when he got bagged, when he got sacked. And that's where we are today.
Ben got burned.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of burning and blood referenced in this first pilot.
Yeah.
It is a very dark and gritty episode. I'll say it again.
It really is. It.
I think it's going to add a lot of character, though. I think that adds a lot of genuine emotion to what's actually going to be told. And I think that's actually allows people that are listening to better relate and better see themselves as one of the insurrectionists standing there with Pharaoh. I think that's a really cool mechanism that they're using in season two. I mean, season one, Benjiro was definitely a very relatable person. He had a very likable personality. You discovered along with him his trail for uncovering the truth. So you felt like you were there while he was doing it. But season two, everything is already out there, and it's presented more in a style where it's recounting facts. And I think the darkness and the grittiness is going to help kind of be the adhesive where people kind of latch on to what's happening within the Halo universe while we're kind of just being told what happened. So,
well, I mean, in this first episode, we did get a lot of things answered from the previous series or previous season. Like, now we know exactly how Oni got all this information mm-hmm. on Ben.
Mm-hmm. Let's not jump ahead too much yet. I do want to try to go in order with this one, with the primer, because there is a lot of information mm-hmm. that got revealed in this podcast. Yeah. Sorry, I need to point this out because this is funny. Crash78000 in the chat. So, this is funny. When Sullivan, who was up to no good, started making trouble in the neighborhood. So that's a great call out. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's funny.
I got begged by only once. I don't know.
We should totally make a Fresh Prince.
I got contacted by Yenny's, and Oni got scared, and we're taking you to the Midnight facility in Bel Air. I don't know.
Bel Air, that's fine. That works.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Midnight facilities in Bel Air.
Oh gosh, That's well, I think we have a new like Halo song that we can write.
Yeah, there we go. Dustin? Oh.
I don't think he's in the chat. I'll hit him up though. Did anyone Did anyone see the music video that BS Angel tweeted out last week? It's a Halo version of Shut Up and Dance With Me, but it's Shut Up, it's Halo 3.
I did not see that. I'm going to look that up.
I totally missed that one.
It's a pretty good video. I haven't posted it on our website yet. I need to. I feel bad that I haven't yet, but it definitely is a callback to the Halo 3 days, because it's been pretty much since, I guess, early on in Halo Reach and back to Halo 3, where we really haven't seen Machinima widely used, or that era of where just everyone was making Machinima and music videos and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really great callback to that. And I mean, obviously the guys have, their singing talent is subpar, but it's the lyrics that they have for it is
in
just
the best way.
Oh yeah, exactly. In that like comedic way where, you know, it's a bunch of nerds that are playing video games and they just have this great lyric set that fits well with the song and they just do it. And it's just one of those things where it's like, that is funny. That is so good.
Yep.
Great stuff.
There you go. For those of you in the chat.
Oh, you found it. Nice. Very nice. But yes, so that random tangent, sorry for that. But going back to this primer episode, we first start hearing Pharaoh talking to a crowd of people talking about the cover up, how Oni suppressed Ben, that they were saying everything that Ben made up was to just kind of ignite the fire of the insurrectionists, and that everything that he came up with was fabricated, including Pharaoh, this mythical person that was the source of information that he got, that he was using to kind of debunk and expose Oni and all that kind of stuff. So he was basically turned into a scapegoat for Oni's purposes. But in the midst of this whole speech that Pharaoh is giving, we're not actually hearing it from Pharaoh's perspective. This is actually a mic from a helmet cam of a trooper. And there's actually an op going on around this. What's the word I'm looking for? This speech, this rally. Thank you.
Rally
is what I was looking for. And it's obvious after a couple times that the operation is somehow related to Pharaoh. Now, the first kind of gut check is, okay, they finally found, Oni finally found Pharaoh, and they're going to pluck her, take her out. So that's kind of the feeling that you first get whenever you're listening to this, or at least that's kind of the feeling that I got. What'd you guys get?
Same here.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
So that was kind of like the first thing that I'm like, okay, so we're starting off the season here where Pharaoh's getting bagged or taken out, which, I mean, obviously she wouldn't be taken out. So obviously,
yeah,
kidnapped,
but perhaps captured.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So she goes on to say how government told everyone in the other colonies that Ben's story was completely fabricated, that Pharaoh was alive. And she goes on to kind of like pump everyone up as like, I'm not fabricated. I was born here in the outer colonies. I was affected just like you all by Oni completely turning their backs when the Covenant came in and glassed us, and trying to basically say that we need to find a way to like make ourselves known to the UEG to actually get them to recognize us, because everything that they've done up to that point hasn't worked. And everyone in the rally supporters are like, we need to throw nuclear weapons at them. We need to get their attention.
Thermonuclear weapon on their hands.
Oh, that accent was like, oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
So stereotypical. So stereotypical.
Yeah.
But they're like, we need to burn down like UNSC recruitments. We need to nuke their resources and all that stuff. And Pharaoh was like, we've tried that. It hasn't worked. She goes on to kind of build them up, saying that we need to find a way to rise up and actually be able to take care of our own, so that when we reach a critical mass, that the UEG can't ignore us, that they will have to address our concerns, that they will have to actually address us as a force to be reckoned with. And there are a few people that once she said that, they're like, you've been in your seat way too long. We need some new leadership. And things start to get tense, and you hear the background chatter of the troops where other people are kind of moving, and they're trying to keep eyes on everybody. And you hear this kind of constant theme that keeps on ringing, focus on the target, focus on the target. And it reaches a critical point where she gets in a scuffle, or not in a scuffle, but in an argument with somebody.
This is actually something I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, go for it.
Because this guy, you know, he basically rushes out. He shouts out from the crowd. It's like, I was with the, I don't remember the abbreviation, but the Freedom and the FLP in 25 on Mamour in 2511. Where were you? You weren't even born yet. And I was we talked about this a little in the, you know, before the show. That relates directly to something brought up in Dr. Halsey's journal, where she saw about I don't remember if it was like a dirty bomb or something, like I think it was like a nuke or something set off on Mamour, and it's like one of the things that motivators say, yeah, the Spartans have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's connected in a lot of that one planet is connected in a lot of ways. Like that was a planet where the Spartan 3s were deployed. It was where Noble Six, before he joined Noble Team, kind of demonstrated his abilities as a saber pilot, and his counterinsurgency tactics there led to him being assigned to Noble Team. So small little mention of this planet, but it's had quite the impact in the lore. And it was also a nice callback to, like I said, to Dr. Halsey's journal and whatnot.
Well, it just goes to show how all this is tied together. I think if...
Yeah, exactly.
Because you do look at that, and I think that's another callback to, well, the UEG does have their fingers still in the outer colonies, just not in the way the outer colonies really want them to. Because, I mean, to your point, it's where like Spartan 3s were sent in. They got a horrible beating, and I mean, if that's where Noble Six trained to be a saber pilot, I mean, that's still something where they're actually secretly involved with the other colonies. So it's a nice tie-in. I do like how everything kind of ties in, and I'm really interested to see how Season 2 ties in with Halo 5 Guardians, or I guess more appropriately, how Halo 5 Guardians ties in with Season 2 of Hunt the Truth.
Yeah.
Because I think there's going to be quite a bit of things in this season where we'll see it in the season, and when we finally get it in Halo 5, at least for those of us that listen, it's gonna be like, oh, it'll be just like that. Yeah. Sudden clarity moment. But yeah, so after that, that's when the troopers actually call for the extraction. So they go in, they pull Pharaoh out from the crowd, and of course
start shooting into the crowd.
Yeah. Idiots. And everyone is a little like, I guess, pretty much freaked out at that point, because you see your leader suddenly get taken by ODST troopers. It's like, oh no, they found her. This is going to end badly. And you would probably expect the worst out of that kind of situation. But we shortly learn afterwards that this isn't an op to kidnap Pharaoh, but it's an op to extract Pharaoh, and we soon realize that Pharaoh is an Oni operative.
A long time Oni operative.
If someone wants to drop the F-bomb, feel free.
Yeah.
That is definitely one of those
holy effed hell.
Up. It's like, what? What?
What the twist?
It's like you're scratching your head, and that's one of those things where you rewind about 10 times to make sure that you heard what you think you heard. Thanks, Crash.
Yeah.
Thanks for the dramatization. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So, as it turns out, Pharaoh has been an Oni operative. Her real name is Maya Sankar. She's a commander within Oni, and she gets all frustrated and all mad at this trooper about who authorized this op. Who is the one that's pulling the strings here? Why are you shooting up a a civilian operation here. Like, she's totally flipped out that troopers have come and interrupted her op.
Shooting into crowds, possibly blowing her cover.
Yeah. It's a sensitive subject, and as we kind of go on through the whole conversation that she has during her extraction, we hear that it is something that's a very delicate situation because of how close she has been to being exposed. And but before we get on to that particular part, I need to kind of rewind here to kind of stay in order. But of course, the ODSTs are saying that we're doing our op and it came up from higher orders, and she's all like, I'm going to make sure that you are on the bench whenever I get out of here and I'm done with you. And through the whole thing, this person called Noah calls him. We just know him by Noah, but someone else in Oni that she knows, I guess it's like, yeah, possibly.
I kind of guess that it was probably her handler.
Right. Or that's what I was thinking.
So you always figure like, yeah.
ODST Wiley. Thank you, Crash. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, he also works on some of the Hunt the Truth stuff. So yeah, thank you for being here in the podcast tonight. Your presence is welcomed and we are greatly humbled and honored.
Yes, most definitely.
We shine brightly because of you.
I like the part where she's describing what she's going to do to this ODST.
Yeah. You're going to kill a Marine? I think a fall from this height, you could probably survive.
Like I said, dark and gritty. She has, like, she knows how to talk some trash.
Yeah.
Like, it's like.
Oh, definitely.
Like, when I heard that, I'm like, oh, this is someone I would not want to piss off. Oh, no.
So, yeah, her and Petra rank right up there. Mm-hmm. Don't piss these women off.
No.
Oh, gosh. This is going to be so fun, this season, too. I am
going to be a blast.
Beyond belief for this season. I really am. But after her little bicker with ODST Wiley, Noah comes on, and I think you're right. I think it's appropriate to say that he's probably her handler in this op. And he basically tells her this was a decision that came down from the top very quickly and that we had to get you out. And she goes and is like, why are they interrupting an operation in the middle of a bunch of civilians? And she also hears that there's other radio chatter on, and she goes on to say, like, wait, the op is still going on? And I think it's one of the other ODSTs, not Wiley, who says, yes, Bravo team is doing cleanup. And she's like, no, get them out of there. And that's when they discover that they say that she was the only deliverable out of this extraction, which meant that everyone else was expendable. Like, the purpose was to get her out, and that was it. Who cared about casualties? Which we learned a little later,
pretty much,
she's not actually very in tune with, for some very peculiar reasons, especially from an Oni operative. Someone that's supposed to be stone cold and just straight business, which is very odd, but we'll get a little more into that. And we don't get the full picture of it until probably like the next episode, but we definitely get a glimpse as to why. But the next thing that we have after Noah tells her that the orders were just to get her out of there, she's already concerned that there a lot of the stuff with the insurrectionists is out of control, and it's gotten way beyond what she ever expected it to be. And she actually brought up the issue with Petra, as in, like, some of the stuff that she's recently released has stirred up a lot of commotion within the insurrectionists. And Noah's like, well, haven't you heard? We picked her up in a freighter on the fringes of the outer colonies. So Petra is now.
And then they play an audio clip.
Yep. Of her getting captured.
It's really hard to understand.
Yeah. It's one point it sounded like wherever she was, it got depressurized. That's kind of what it seemed like to me. But I'm guessing it was when they actually got her and brought her in. That's what it made it sound
Petra
like.
Petra was not coming willingly.
Oh, hell yeah. No.
That's what it sounds a lot like.
I mean, after she heard what happened to Ben. I mean, we could just tell by the last episode of season one. Mm-hmm. She was pissed.
Oh,
she
yeah.
knew that Ben was entering some dark territory, and she didn't want to be a part of it originally. But when she heard of kind of the atrocities of Oni, because you would expect that a normal Oni person doesn't tend to ask questions and just kind of does what he does, knowing that, yeah, there's some effed up crap going on. But for someone, and I think there's actually a lot of compassion for Ben that Petra got over the duration of the story progressing, where she came to a point where they hurt my friend, and I know that this is the truth, and this needs to be rectified. And now we have this gap between the end of season one and the beginning of season two, where it's like, okay, so Ben got sacked, and now Petra got sacked. We lost Mashaq, and now we learn that Pharaoh is actually an Oni op.
And we learn a little bit more about Mashaq.
That we do. Haven't gotten there quite yet.
Possibly.
Quite yet. But yeah, so Petra got picked up on the fringes of the Outer Colonies, and the whole situation of the insurrectionists and everything, it's definitely taken a toll on Maya, because she also mentions that, again, I've only listened to it twice, so you guys may need to correct me on this, but whenever Noah, or I think she brought up the issue of that Oni has ordered her to kill other Oni agents, and that she ended up looking up the agents that she had killed and realizing that one of them was 27 and that the other one was just a year behind her for training. And it seems like it's definitely one of those things that as her time with Pharaoh, she's lost kind of that Oni touch, because she's been relating with these people that have these deep feelings and that, and these deep stories, and knowing who you're dealing with is something that's kind of changed her. And I think that's kind of the origin of where this season two is actually taking place. And we'll kind of see that as we get to the end of that, of this pilot episode. Why? But we see that there's definitely with what's currently going on with the cleanup and how she feels attached to the innies that are obviously getting killed. Oh, I know why with this, because it was the casualty report that came in, and, mm-hmm. and she was concerned about them getting killed, and then that made her think about the other Oni agents that she's been ordered to kill, and a lot of the stone hard cold that you get like from Oni, or that you perceive from Oni, it seems like she's kind of grown out of that and grown more human. Because you also hear another part of her talking where she says that the insurrectionists believe in me. And then she has to step back and say, like, oh, wait, they believe in Pharaoh. Where she's almost at that point where she's mixing up her Oni responsibilities with her cover, which is very dangerous.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with long-term undercover is you start to lose yourself. Because you...
The persona.
Yeah, you live, eat, sleep this persona for so many years that it starts to change you, and you can get confused very easily which thoughts are really mine. I'm trying to think of an example. But, well, the killing the two Oni agents, I mean, she basically was ordered to kill them, which is, you know, she discusses this right about this time, and she has a problem with that. She did it, but she has a real problem with it. So, and that could be the Pharaoh side of this, you know, dual personality that she's been living, kind of exerting itself. And the fact that she went and looked at their records to learn who they were, you learned this. This first guy had a 3-year-old at home. The other guy was just a year behind her in training. It's not something an Oni agent needs or wants to know when they're talking about eliminating, persons.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's definitely interesting how that's kind of evolved, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely the feelings there that have gotten mixed up with her being Pharaoh, and we learn that she's actually been in this position for 5 years, which I can understand after 5 years. I mean, I'm surprised that, like, once she got pulled, she's like, hey, what are you doing messing with my op? It's like, that still takes some, like, diehard dedication to still recognize that you're on a mission. But to get that involved, to be exposed to something like that for 5 years, you're going to be changed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here.
Well, I think a lot of it is the confusion of why she was collected.
Yeah.
She's like, why in the world are you pulling me?
Yeah.
You're destroying my op. What chance have I got being reinserted now? You know, stuff like that.
When she points out it's going to be one heck of a story of covering up why she got abducted and getting her back in there. And to Noah's point, we need to get you back in there, but it's not time for that. And throughout the rest of the conversation, we learned that she was originally supposed to kill Mashaak, but there were some gory details that she left out. But we basically know why Mashaak died now, which, poor Mashaak. I still miss Mashaak. I think he was one of the coolest characters.
There's an interesting thought. Okay, the statement was that her weapon did not register a shot.
Well, she said she didn't use her weapon, and then she said, I'll spare you.
All she said was she didn't use her weapon, and she'll spare him the gory details. Did she really do it?
Yeah, I like being online today, people were speculating, oh, Mashaak might still be alive because,
yeah. Most likely not, but I know there's people out there thinking it, and me too.
Mashaak is dead.
That's what I'm kind of leaning towards, but I can't really fault people for thinking that there's this chance he might be alive.
Well, it's the same thing for Cortana. It really is.
Well, that I can fault people. That I can fault people for, because we have very definitive answers on that.
True.
Mashaak is a little.
But whenever she said, I'll spare you the gory details, that kind of means that, I mean, my first interpretation was, okay, something got dropped on him, or he got thrown into like a wood chipper or something.
Wood chipper.
So those are my first thoughts.
Maybe trampled by a crowd or something. As he sounded like, as I recall from when he was that final call to Ben, he sounded like he was in a crowded area.
Mm-hmm. That's what kind of bugs me about that conversation is being an only operative. She wouldn't have to make it a gory death.
Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that she intended it to be that way, but maybe she was running after him. He noticed her and he slipped up and fell into a pile of spikes or got impaled by a collapsed building or something. I mean, gory details leaves a lot to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to
say.
I'm
just saying that if she physically killed him, I mean, all she would have to do is snap his neck. And don't tell me she doesn't know how to do it.
Well, I'm sure she does.
She doesn't know how to do it.
Nice.
There are things that agents of that caliber, they don't necessarily need a gun or a knife to kill somebody. So the gory details part, it just... Not that I want to know what they did, but I want to know what happened.
Yeah. You want to know the gory details.
Yep. So in addition to kind of learning Mashaak's ultimate demise, we also learned that the reason they pulled her was because some of the stuff that she was doing was outside the scope of her objectives. So, I think they brought that up whenever, like, she looked up the two other Oni people that she killed. And it's like, that's not your job to know who they are. It's like, you have a job, you have objectives for that job, you should follow the objectives. Which makes sense, but then again, we look at her being in this op for 5 years. You can't expect her not to change, I think. At the very end of our little trip, we hear that they're taking her to a place called Midnight Facility.
Midnight.
Which is where they're storing Dr. Halsey, isn't it?
I don't know if they ever confirmed whether or not she was actually at Midnight Facility, but we did have Dr. Magnuson from the Thursday War. Mm-hmm. Gek Law was there way back in 2557. And Daniel Clayton, the illegitimate son of Captain James Cutter, is there.
I thought in the Spartan Ops series, they retrieved Dr. Halsey from Midnight Facility.
I don't know if they actually said where she was retrieved from. I wouldn't be surprised if she had been there.
Yeah, but that's side point. Anyway.
Yeah. Though on that side point, this is something, again, I don't know if it's really going to come up, and I can't blame people for speculating on it, but, and just in case, I'll say Halo New Blood spoilers, just in case. Might Mickey, the traitor Spartan, be there? Because what better place to keep a traitorous Spartan than a facility Ooh. Like Midnight?
Hmm.
I mean, we never actually learned what happened.
Well,
because he was handed over to June, but I wouldn't be surprised if June handed him over to Oni at some point.
Well, see, Oni was asking for
him,
and they said, no, he's a Spartan. We will deal with it.
Yeah. But I mean, then he, you know, Buck handed him over to June. It wouldn't surprise me if June or Musa that later handed Mickey over to Oni.
Well, from what I remember, it was Musa that was saying that we will deal with him, not Oni.
Actually, we just have been informed by Crash that said June took him to get a sweet face tattoo.
Okay. So at least
went
we
to
know
the tattoo parlor. Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's possible.
Midnight probably has some tattoo parlor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best place to get tattoos is prison. You know, they always use those clean needles and, you know, that the good ink, you know, that it doesn't have anything in it.
It's poisonous. I commit crimes just so I can go to prison and get tattoos. That's how I live.
Yeah, for the free meals and for, like, free video games and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yep. As we all know, prison has.
Yeah. Anyways. So after that was kind of the last we actually hear of this trip and her extraction, kind of the look back at the story. And then she actually comes on what we assume is present day. So basically the whole episode up to this point has been, and like we mentioned before, everything's kind of already set. This is more of a recounting of what has happened and her kind of going through and sharing this with us. So another thing to point out that I forgot to point out at the beginning and I meant to was that if you take a look at the Hunt the Truth website, we're actually seeing this as a investigation that's going on. And you're actually seeing this through the eyes of Admiral Saren Osman. So this is something that is an ongoing investigation. So I think it's because of that, and let me know what you guys think of this. This is a... like these podcasts are already here. It's an ongoing investigation, or that Maya is making these podcasts while the investigation is going on. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Because before, the Hunter Truth website was the blog of Benjiro, and now we're actually seeing it as an investigation through the eyes of Oni, through the eyes of Oni itself, basically Admiral Osman.
Yeah, it's been locked down by her for eyes only section 3. So,
right. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
So, I mean, like at least go ahead.
I was going to say, well, then these audio files or podcasts couldn't really be podcasts. They would be more like personal journals, you know, like an audio journal.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I mean, if this is locked down, you know, under Oni security, eyes only encryption, it's, you know, this would have to be more of just a personal, you know, her personal log type deal, you know, not like a podcast that in the previous episode was pushed out to the public through the dark net or whatever you want to call it.
What would they call it? In season 1,
they call Well, the secret one was the ChatterNet.
I thought there was, but there's another network.
That was the communication, but I thought they had a term for.
Yeah, I remember there was as well. No, it's not Skynet, Unicheck. I thought there was a term. I can't remember it, though.
Of course, we could have all just made it up, too. So,
the only terms I remember were Waypoint and the ChatterNet.
I mean, the ChatterNet, was. Well, the slush was the stuff that was just out there that you would sift through.
Right. The slush was just the stuff that was floating out there. We see what you're saying. White pants on fire. Interesting username. But no, there's something else. Crash said ChatterNet is like WhatsApp. Waypoint is like the internet. But yeah, there was some other network. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, so some kind of dark network that's used to scuffle around information without being noticed.
So, this doesn't appear to be something that's being publicly broadcast.
The only weird thing, though, is like when you get to the prelude or prologue, whatever you want to call it, that would seem to indicate that she is broadcasting this out for someone to hear.
At this point, it seems like she's going rogue. That's the feeling that I get by the end of this pilot episode, where she has seen what these people believe in. They see the pain and the struggles that they've gone through, and she has sympathized with them, which obviously is bad for the op, but maybe good for the insurrection or for the outer colonies.
Well, I mean, it also could be, through the first part of this, it would be basically her covenor covering her ass to be able to stay on this op. And then the second half of it, she's flat gone rogue and, is in hiding and stuff and starting to push these out to the public, something like that.
It seems like at this point she has definitely gone rogue, because at the very end, she talks about how Oni doesn't really care about human lives. To them, human lives in the other colonies are just a cost-benefit analysis with complex equations that predict probabilities and outcomes. And this is where we learn that she has been living as Pharaoh for 5 years, and that through all of this, she doesn't know what Maya thinks anymore. Like, the person that she was before taking on this assignment, before taking on this op, that's a stranger to her now. Like, she's been Pharaoh for so long. She's been in...
No, like I said earlier, she's lost herself.
Oh, White Pants on Fire is Noah. Hi, Noah. Thanks for dropping by. Sorry, I just throw that out there real quick.
Oh, wow. That's actually pretty cool.
He's teasing us. Wow. He says, I have lots of thoughts. Can't share them, but wanted to say thanks for making Podtack and covering up the truth. Thank you for the tease.
Yes, we all greatly appreciate it. As if we didn't have enough to think about.
Yeah. But no, thanks for dropping by. That means a lot.
Appreciate it. Definitely.
So we have Noah in the story, Noah in the chat, Illuminati confirmed.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yes. Clearly. Noah has a beard. Gabriel has a beard.
That's the ultimate tease. To say that you're working on the next episode right now, that's the ultimate tease. Really? Really?
Really?
But no, we really appreciate this. I think all three of us and then everyone else is just
super excited. Oh, you guys are doing an awesome job and can't wait till next week.
I mean, whenever the season 2 was announced, I'm like, dude, this is awesome. And I think you and I were DMing Toa once that announcement was made.
Yeah.
So excited for this. This is going to be awesome. Yeah. No, this is, oh man. I love this. This has been, season 1 was fantastic, obviously, and I'm liking the way season 2 is shaping up already. And this is just the pilot episode. This is even the first actual episode. This is just the pilot.
And we've already been going for an hour and a half on it. And it's an 11-minute episode.
Yeah.
Wait until the other episodes.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, it's we have the intro, we have all the stuff that was preceding it, and then we have the primer, the pre-look at the episode, and then now we have the actual episode. So if you look at it, it's probably like 13-14 minutes of stuff to talk about. But I can only assume that given that the last episodes were what, 15 to 20 minutes long, and that these episodes are going to be longer,
mm-hmm.
we're looking at possibly 25 to 30 minute episodes.
Yeah.
I would imagine so.
Absolutely love.
Yes.
Ouch.
Every delicious second.
It's going to be every Tuesday after lunch. I'm going to be at work. Tune into the website. It's like, okay, zone out for an hour.
Yeah.
It would be really neat if they had that on a podcast feed.
They do. It's still the same iTunes feed.
They do?
It's still the same iTunes feed. Yep. If you are subscribed to the old feed on iTunes, if you're subscribed through SoundCloud, wherever else that they had the feed published, you should be getting the episodes. Now, I know for iTunes, it's one of those things where if there's not a podcast that gets put out, it doesn't get checked very often. So unless they've pinged the server to check the updates and actually see it regularly posting again, it might actually take a little while. I haven't personally checked the feed myself to see if it's popped up yet, but it should be popping up.
Well, let's see. I've got the hunting dogs.
What?
Ooh, I'm going to have to find this. Hunt the truth. It'll five hunt the truth. No. Oh, I'm going through my podcast feed, see if I can find it.
Oh.
But anyway, on to the next thing.
Yes, on the next thing. So, well, I mean, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
The whole last minute and a half was basically her saying that Oni doesn't really consider the human life as a life.
Yeah. And goes into, and as we talked about pretty in depth early on, the whole dual personality, I've been Pharaoh so long, who is Maya, and how does she feel about these people dying?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of that point where you see the dichotomy of Maya, who I'm going to say who she was, to Pharaoh, who she has become. And she's made a relationship with these people. She understands their struggle. She understands that they want better lives for themselves. And she sympathizes with that because she has been in that position for so long. Just to point out what Noah said, if you were an Oni person, you wouldn't have really been concerned with the two Oni operatives that you were killing to protect Ben. But she did it anyways.
And then turn around and serve him up on a platter.
Right. And we hear that she has feelings for these people. She lost two people, two of her friends. Two of her best friends.
Two of the best friends she ever had, in her own words.
From mm-hmm. the rally she just got extracted from. And that hurt her. That was one of those things that really, I think this is kind of the example where it kind of woke her up and it's like, wow, I am in really deep with this and I don't like what I'm seeing. And this is where I think she finally went rogue.
Or it's definitely going to factor into that. Cause I'm almost certain I think we actually discussed this, like the stuff that's being recorded, like from her being extracted mm-hmm. is, you know, way in the past. Whereas the end card, like the end stuff and the prologue, whatever.
Yeah, we know what you mean.
are obviously much more closer to the present.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff that we're going to see in here. I think that's going to really show her making the transition. Because if anything, what I'm guessing is going to happen is that we'll see a lot of this stuff where it's flashback, kind of going from this first situation of her being extracted. And from that extracted, her being taken out of the position of Pharaoh. And then we'll see that time between her being taken out and then maybe her deciding to go rogue and seeing how some of the stuff is changing. Because I also have a feeling that a lot of that mysterious stuff that happened that we didn't really get to touch on, that Mashaq was talking about, I have a weird feeling that we'll get that explained a lot more in season two. You guys think that's, you guys have a similar feeling to that or not?
Yeah.
I can't help but just ignore the fact that we had just the slightest mentions of this mysterious stuff that's happening. And it's obviously related to, or in my opinion, I think it's obviously related to the Forerunner stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's been talk of like something with the domain, and then Toa, you mentioned the Guardians might have something to do with it as well. So there's just a lot of questions about the mysterious events that happened that we got no closure on because it focused so much on the Oni lies and the Oni secrets. But you kind of look back on what Pharaoh said or Maya said, and that she cares for these people. She understands the struggle. I think understanding part of that struggle is understanding what is happening in these outer colonies. And thank you for the reminder, Crash. To say that there's been some little video snippets of some really weird things that have been happening that have been popping up.
Oh, yeah, watched that video multiple times after it was posted.
Videos, because there have been three of them.
As I mentioned before we started, I've had a really bad day. So I have to go retrieve the
Evidence. But yeah, there's just lots of, oh gosh.
You know, talking about connections to Halo 5, all three video clips are set on Meridian, a planet we know we're going to visit at some point.
Don't know. That's just really, really weird stuff. But
yeah, there's something else that I kind of hope this whole Hunt the Truth season 2 explains a little bit better. That's floating around on Twitter.
Try it.
Yeah. Well, actually, just because this is the primary episode, we are going to touch a little bit more on the Triad next week. So,
and I can't wait.
Yeah. I need to do a little more research. Need to do a little more research personally on it.
Luckily for you, there's really not that much out there. They were featured in one Halo Evolution story, stomping on the heels of a fuss.
Okay. Well, that is something I will need to research anyways.
Yeah. But I do want to say one thing. There were three video clips.
Yes.
We have the first one tweeted out by the Triad, 3 and 3. I don't know if that actually means anything, but given Hunt the Truth, who knows?
Yeah, and I haven't done the frame-by-frame analysis that I'm sure someone else has done already, but that's something that we'll definitely talk about next week whenever we dive into episode 1 of season 2.
Yes.
So we're definitely going to touch on it. I personally am not prepared for it yet, but
yeah.
Yeah, lots of good stuff that we'll talk about. But that wraps it up for the primer and the pilot episode. I think this is going to be lots of cool stuff. Like I said, the two words I'm using are dark and gritty, which I like. I like the direction this is taking.
Oh, definitely.
I love the setup for this. I really have enjoyed season 1 of Hunt the Truth. I'm really looking forward to season 2. And yeah, I can't wait. I'm glad that both you guys are here along for the ride. Toa Freak has agreed graciously to be on our podcast throughout the entire season. So thank you so much for being back on the show. It's a blessing to have you back on.
It was great to be back, and it is great to. I look forward to talking more about this as the story unfolds.
We are getting teased so much in our chat right now, and on Twitter. It's
yes.
Oh gosh, but yes, we will be back next week. We are planning to do these on Tuesday. We may move these to Wednesday just so that we actually have the ability to actually look through and. Hear the episodes a couple of times so we can actually get a full picture of what's going on so we can actually talk to it well. But we'll figure it out by next week if we're planning on doing this on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. So we'll let you guys know that for sure. And then it'll be that schedule every single week until the end of season 2. So we got that coming. We also have our Last Light discussion that's going to be on our next podcast on Thursday. So if you're listening to us on the Twitch stream, first of all, thank you so much for coming out. We appreciate you guys coming out here and supporting the stream. We've actually had a very good turnout tonight. Thank you guys so much. I think we've consistently been in the 20s all night, which has been good. And I think we got around 30 somewhere at the max whenever we first started the stream. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. I am going to say that for anyone that tunes in on Thursday, we are giving away one of the Spartan Fred McFarlane toys. And yes, that does include one of the rec packs. So we will be giving that away on Thursday in our last light discussion show.
Ooh, me.
Sorry, you're Podtacular staff. You're not eligible.
I quit. Oh.
Well, nice knowing you.
I'm leaving. I don't play with you guys anymore.
I guess we have to find a new game night coordinator. Dang. Anyways, but yeah, so make sure you're tuning in on Thursday. For those that are downloading the podcast, then that is likely today that you're, well, if you're hearing this on the day it comes out, it's today. But if not, then you've probably have already missed it. But yes, we are, for those that are in the chat and are looking for a Spartan Fred thing, then, oh my gosh, we are getting bombed in this chat right now because we have the voice actor for Pharaoh in the Twitch stream right now. Wow. Okay, this is...
You're sharp.
Wow.
She's only been here for about 5 minutes.
Wow. I'm a little starstruck right now, to be perfectly honest. I'm just saying.
To those of you in the recording, listening to this recording, that loud thump was dust falling out of his chair.
No, I did not fall out of my chair. Just to clarify, I did not fall out of my chair. Oh, gosh. But yes, we have Ian or Crash in here, and Janina.
Well, they are more than welcome,
Janina,
to Crash.
I hope I didn't butcher your name when I said it earlier, but please forgive me if I did. But thank you for dropping by. I see that you say you had to go, but thank you so much for dropping by, and hopefully you will drop by on another one of our shows. And I don't know, maybe in the grand scheme of things, we'll actually be able to. No, I did not pass out, Noah. Jeez. But yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get some people on the show. I know we talked to Noah about getting him on after season two, but yeah, all good stuff.
I'm in.
So, but that's going to wrap it up for the show tonight, unless you guys have anything else you wanted to talk about the primer and the pilot episode before we wrap up.
I don't have anything.
Nope.
Other than awesome job, guys.
And amazing job.
Indeed. So with that, thank you everyone for tuning in. Remember, Thursday, that is our last light discussion. It will be full of spoilers. So if you have not read the book, you might want to skip on this.
You should absolutely tune in.
You might not want to listen to this podcast just yet. So I recommend going reading the book and then coming back and listening to the podcast when you have finished. So with that said, thank you everyone for tuning in to the Twitch stream. Thank you for downloading us. You can find out more on podtacular.com. You can go find our season one Hunt of Truth episodes. We're doing the same thing as we're doing for Halo, or for season two as we did for season one. We're having a dedicated episode every week. So we're actually doing two episodes per week as long as season two goes on. So you get double the fun of Podtacular for the next 5 weeks at least. So enjoy it while you can. Please make sure you go and check out our social networks. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Definitely want to check out YouTube this week. Our first release of videos is actually happening tonight. There is some Halo 5 Guardians campaign stuff that we will be releasing. So make sure you guys are subscribed to the YouTube channel, podtacular.com/YouTube, to get all that information. And when the videos come out, you will get your little subscription notification. Also, make sure you check us out on Instagram. And obviously, if you're listening to us post-show, we record our shows live on Twitch. And we also have some game nights that we are doing on Twitch as well. And once Halo 5 Guardians comes out, we're going to have a full regular stream schedule for you guys. So you can get some Halo 5 goodness whenever Halo 5 comes out. Please make sure you check out our podcast networks. Our podcast network. We are part of thepodcast.com. That is PODKAST. And they have other game-specific shows like Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast, Critzcast, which is a Team Fortress 2 podcast, The Learning Cliff, which is a EVE Online podcast. There's also Work in Progress and How to Murder Time. So please go check out their podcasts if there are topics that you're interested in, or if you're just wanting to listen to other great podcasts. They're definitely worth checking out. On behalf of Mr. Toa Freak, thank you again for being on the show, and Godzilla T and everyone else here on Patekula, thank you everyone for tuning in. Keep on shining and achieve your way to transcendence. See you guys on Thursday.
Praise be to Dask.